What's up, everybody? Welcome, everyone. Mom's trying to get in, and it doesn't look good. Anyway, welcome, everyone. Happy Star Trek Day. But more on that later.
It's not a Star Trek podcast.
No, this is, yes, we are not a
Star Trek podcast. Happy Star Trek Day.
Yes, happy Star Trek Day, but yeah. In the meantime, welcome everybody. I'm Damien.
I'm Zoe.
And this is The Exchange, one of the lovely offerings that the Great American Broadcast Network offers. You can check that out at gabnet.net. And in the meantime, you know, you can join the show by going to gabnet.net and looking for the section that says, what is a citizen panel? And then scrolling down and clicking on the part that says, join the exchange with Damien Chaplin or something like that. I do got to say, it was a lot
easier. It's way easier than he just made that sound.
Okay.
You just go to gabnet.net. You go, there's a box over on the right that says, what is a citizen panel about joining? And you click on Damien.
Okay.
And I did it on my phone. So it works mobile too.
Yes. Okay.
6:30 on Mondays.
Yeah, it still was a lot easier to just say, click on the Zoom button on the right-hand side of the screen.
Well, you know, that was a good line.
Yeah.
Now you're going to have to shorten the rest.
Aha.
Find my name and click on it. That's what you could say.
Okay, yes, find my name and click on it. Because I did identify myself just now as Damien. And look for the one that says Damien, and that's where you'll find it. Mom and Bert have finally joined the show. Hello.
Hello, hello.
And happy Star Trek Day to you.
Oh, and happy Star Trek Day to you, too.
Yes, yes. For those who are unaware, Star Trek premiered in the United States today, September 8th, in the year 1966. That was 59 years ago, folks. And also concurrent with today was 52 years ago today, Star Trek the Animated Series premiered. In case you Gen Xers want to feel old, there you go. 52 years ago today, Star Trek the Animated Series. La 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 la. Hello, everybody. It's been 2 weeks, 'cause Labor Day. 'Cause it occurred to me that every year I come up here on Monday, Labor Day, and I say, why are we doing a show? It's Labor Day. We're not supposed to be working. And this year I decided, let's not work. So, sorry, we took Labor Day off, but that's okay. We have plenty of things we can talk about. And I hope you didn't miss us too much. Let's see. Mom, Bert, anything going on with you guys?
No.
It's been 2 weeks. Nothing?
Not really.
Okay. All right. Well, that's okay. There doesn't have to be anything going on. What we had stuff going on.
We did this weekend.
We did this weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah. We went and saw Thievery Corporation again, one of our favorite bands.
For the sixth time.
Yes. And one might have wondered if it would be any different to go see them again. And once again, they did not disappoint. In fact, I believe it was the best show yet.
I actually tend to agree. I was definitely wondering before we went how good is it going to be? This is the sixth time we've seen them. It's the same thing over and over. And it's not quite the same thing over and over. And in any case, this was their best show ever. They were absolutely on fire.
Yeah. Yeah, totally on fire. We danced the entire time.
Yeah.
It was like wet heads.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah. It was amazing.
And then the next day, we got up and we went to the Alameda Antiques Fair.
Which is huge. It only happens once a month. It's all antiques and collectibles.
And, it was...
overwhelming.
and we were already exhausted from the night before.
Yeah, we're not spring chickens anymore. 3 hours of dancing, and that's it.
Yeah. And but we nevertheless managed 3 hours of walking in the antique
Almost
mall.
Almost four.
Yeah. Scored like $50 worth of comic books and vintage magazines.
Yeah, we hardly even bought anything after all that work of walking.
Yeah, didn't really buy much. There wasn't a whole lot that I was... See, you know,
it's great for people that collect something, and they're there to look for their 14-karat gold jewelry or their vintage leather jackets or whatever it is they're collecting. And, I mean, there's a abundance of everything, but if you're just, you know, sort of generic and looking for vintage cool things, it's very pricey. So you don't even want to ask half the time. You just walk by it.
Yeah, it's hard to find deals, you know, but they could be found. I mean, like I said, I got Star Trek comic books for $1, you know, and they're good condition because you can find, you know, throwaway comics all over the place. But, yeah, and then there were other vendors who were asking $5 and up for them, and I'm not interested in that, you know, so... Yeah.
There was a lot of vintage clothing, and I love to collect vintage clothing. It's one of my favorite things, but I like to collect it when it's $1 or $2 at an estate sale or a thrift store or whatever, and it's exciting to find it cheap, you know? But there, it's like everything's pricey, so I don't even want to look through the racks as much as I love vintage, but I'm not paying $35 for a vintage slip.
Yeah, I hear you.
And there of course, was a, there was that's a lot what of I'd price it.
Like there was a lot of stuff that was like that. That was just we're bargain hunters. We're looking for the low price stuff, and these are the people who have already found it at a low price and are selling it for the high price.
I bought two purses and a piece of leather out of that whole day.
Two purses and a piece of leather. Yeah, I did find a G2 Generation 2 Optimus Prime trailer only. But it was $4, so I couldn't pass it up. Yes, Bert?
Speaking of vintage clothing, I have one pair of bell-bottom jeans from the Navy that I don't fit in anymore.
Okay, the black ones with the buttons in dungarees. The front?
The dungarees.
Oh, well...
And... I just sort of, they don't fit me. They're too small now. And they're not part of the uniform anymore, so they can't get them from the exchange or the Navy or anything. And I went on Google, and they're all for sale about $75 to $100.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, you can't beat a good pair of bell bottoms with a tiny little waist. The girls buy them.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll give you the same deal that I told my dad, which is we'll sell them and we'll split it with you. We went and saw.
I keep thinking maybe I'll get it back down and lose enough weight to wear them again, but.
Yeah, but what are you gonna wear them around town? You gonna go shopping in them?
Look at me. I don't care.
I know, but
you'd look great in them. I totally encourage you to squeeze back into those pants and go all over town.
I'm not saying you wouldn't look great in them, but seriously, I mean, what happens if you trip over them? I mean, these are bell bottoms.
They're not that big of bell bottoms.
Oh, I see. Okay, not hugely huge. Okay. Yeah, I mean, we went and saw my dad. That's the other thing we did. And he said the same thing. You know, I have all these clothes I'm trying to get rid of. And, you know, my dad keeps the same clothes for 40 years. So, you know, when he says I have clothes I'm trying to get rid of, he really does mean I have clothes from the 70s and 80s I want to get rid of. And so, yeah, we're gonna be getting rid of stuff for him like that, stuff that we think is worth some money, you know, but he doesn't have the capacity to sell anything anymore because his vision is pretty much gone. So we are taking care of that stuff. He offloaded all of his piano rolls on me. And I put those up for sale. If anybody's interested in vintage piano rolls, I've got a really great lot up for sale for you. Check it out, interstellartraders.com. No, Interstellar Traders on eBay. That's where you can find them. Yeah. So, anything you got that you want to get rid of that you think is worthwhile, hand it over. We know how to do it. We have the ability to do it. What else?
Only for parents, though.
Only, yes, only for parents.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Disclaimer. For parental units only.
Yeah. Well, maybe for other loved ones if they, you know, convince us maybe. Well enough.
Yeah.
Okay, what else we got? The paper. We watched The Paper. First couple episodes of The Paper, the Office spinoff that premiered just this week. And, or I should say last week, since this is Monday. And it is... NBC decided basically at the last moment that they were going to binge drop it. They were going to drop the entire series at once instead of once a week, which is fine, but I don't like it, honestly. I like a weekly release. I like being able to...
But this kind of show, I like it.
Okay, I get it.
I don't want to wait for a little sitcom show for a week, and no, I mean, I'll wait for Star Trek.
But that's how sitcoms become successful. That's how every successful sitcom has become so, is by making their audience wait a week for the next episode. And Friends did it. I mean, Cheers did it. MASH did it. Everybody did it. You know, you had to...
But there's no comparison. They didn't also have something like Cheers that was streaming. Because they didn't.
But so they still have the ability. They still have the ability to drop it on a weekly basis. You know, now that hasn't changed. That hasn't gone away.
But you're saying the dropping on a weekly basis is preferable to dropping the whole thing and letting somebody binge it. And I'm saying you don't have evidence to that.
Well, I know what you're saying. You're saying that back in the day there was no other option and that dropping it weekly was the only option and therefore, you know, but that's fine. But I'm saying from an objective perspective, the world talks about it much, much, much longer when it's released on a weekly basis. They talk about it for months. People are talking about that Seinfeld episode. Did you see last week's Seinfeld episode? And they do it for months because an entire season runs for a month or months. Now, a whole season only runs for 10 weeks these days.
Yeah, that's annoying.
Yeah, that's pretty annoying. But nonetheless... We can talk about it for 10 weeks. We're talking about Star Trek for once a week for 10 weeks, you know, and...
I won't be having much to talk about a sitcom like this or The Office or I know, but Parks and
I do. I listen to podcasts who break down episodes like that on a weekly basis. And when it drops as a binge watch, they do one episode that covers the season and that's it. And it immediately is replaced by something else. In their mind, by, you know, yet another show or a TV or a movie that came out. You know, it has no
But
more,
you can time out the podcast.
No, but I mean, it doesn't have any staying. It has the same amount of staying power as a movie does, which is to say a week or two in the public's mind before it's replaced by something else. But a weekly drop keeps it in people's brains, you know, and that's how they become so freaking popular. Word of mouth spreads and people can tune in next week to see what everybody's talking about. When it's, you know, I saw this great show, it's streaming over here, you can watch the entire season, people go, oh, okay, and they mentally file it, and, you know, there's no urgency to tune in next week, there's no fear of missing out, because everybody's loving this, and they want to be part of the phenomenon. There, none of that happens, you know, so, unless it's something really unusual that comes along, like Stranger Things, or, you know, something like that, where they, you know, Netflix will drop it in a binge and it just proves to be so popular. But I mean, that Sunday night slot on HBO is what made Game of Thrones popular.
For me, it's for Games of Thrones. It's for Star Trek. Yeah, I kind of like the wait because I'm really looking forward to it. I don't really look forward to the next sitcom. Plus, you say it will... sorry, I beg to differ with you on this. but, you know, I feel like I forget it quicker as a, like having to I'm going to forget to watch it next week because it wasn't like, oh my God, I can't wait to find out what happened or I'm so in love with those people or blah, blah, blah. This show, you know, hasn't really had time in, what did we see, two episodes or
three? We saw two.
In the two episodes that we saw, they hadn't really completed that character development that sunk me in, like, oh, I'm going to be so curious to see what happens.
Well, it is only two episodes in.
I know, but it's still a sitcom. It's still a certain variety. In my brain, it's been cataloged over there instead of over there where the Star Trek is.
Okay.
So I actually prefer it this way. You're going to get me to watch the whole thing this way on our own leisure.
I see. Okay.
I'm not sure you could have got me through the entire, all the seasons of The Office or Parks and Rec if I had to wait a week every time.
All right. That's fair enough. That's fair enough.
You know, to stay engaged, I wanted to keep seeing the comedy.
Okay. All right. That's fair enough. And maybe NBC was not confident enough in its power to hold people's attention for 10 consecutive weeks. So, you know, maybe it was a smart marketing move on their part. But I still, nonetheless, prefer the weekly drop.
I get it. You like the podcasting, too, and the
well, you know, there's a lot of, I'm just used to it. I just like it better. You know, even my podcasts drop on a weekly basis, and I look forward to what next week's podcast has in store. So, I mean, that's just the way life lives, right?
We listened to something fun today on the way home in the car.
I was going to get there.
Oh, sorry. Jump in the gun.
As soon as we got to talking Star Trek, which we will do here in one moment, because we haven't been talking about it this whole episode. Not at all. I should just want to mention that, in case you didn't read, Darth Vader's lightsaber sold at auction.
Oh, yes, I saw that.
Mm-hmm. $3.65 million for Darth Vader's lightsaber. Yeah. What is the matter with fandom? I mean, I know this is a valuable piece of film history, but seriously, folks.
So is this the one from the original movie?
This is actually was used in both The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. Yes, it is the...
Does it really go zoom and have it in light? No. Oh, that's so lame.
No, it's got the rod that comes out that they use to, digitally draw on, basically. But this is the screen used.
Does it even make noise?
No, of course not. It's a prop. It's a prop.
That's a ridiculous amount of money.
Exactly.
And do you think they own anything else from Darth Vader?
Oh, probably.
The person that bought it?
They'd better. Can you imagine this being your only piece of Star Wars memorabilia? A $3.65 million lightsaber. Also sold in the same auction, Indiana Jones bullwhip gun holster and belt from The Last Crusade went for $485,100. Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man 2 costume went for $289,900. And Picard's Resican flute and screen matched box from the Star Trek The Next Generation episode The Inner Light went for $403,200.
I'd really like to know who bought that.
I would. That is a piece of memorabilia I would love to have. I mean, who wouldn't want to have the Resican flute that was used on screen and actually has Picard's saliva inside, you know? I mean, you could swab it for Patrick Stewart's DNA and clone him. That's definitely worth it, right?
Well, that anyway. Does tend to happen in the universe, so the likelihood, statistically sound there.
I guess so.
Uh-huh.
When was
but
this?
I really would like to know who bought the flute.
Well, it's undoubtedly anonymous. Unless they want to come out, you know, and say, here it is. But
it'll show up on one of our Facebook
possibly.
Star Trek
Star Wars
pages. Yeah, Star Wars pages.
Yeah.
No, we were talking about the flute.
Oh, the flute.
Star Trek.
Star Trek. Yeah. I
doubt on one of those pages, and if it happened.
They're not on Facebook.
The person who spent $400,000+.
They're not on our Star Trek Facebook group.
Oh.
The Lego group this last week announced on the 4th their very first $1,000 set. It is.
Did you read the reviews of it?
It is a vertical slice of the Death Star.
Wow.
And it
is. I wish everybody could see that picture. You should look it up.
It is $1,000. Yeah, go ahead and look it up. It stands 2 feet tall and about.
That's it? It looks way bigger in the picture. 2 feet would be like this.
Well, I mean, look, there, you can see the minifig right there. I mean, it's not that big. But anyway, $1,000. $1,000. And this is after they broke their record with the $800 Millennium Falcon.
Okay, the $800 Millennium Falcon is amazing, and I kind of want it. And I'm not even a big Lego fan person. It's so cool. I've seen it. I saw it somewhere, Vegas or somewhere.
We saw it at the Lego store.
Was that in San Francisco in that fancy mall?
Yep.
Yeah. But I'm not impressed by this, especially for $1,000. I don't need it.
Yeah, and I'm just going to say again, $1,000 toys are really fucking bad. They're really fucking bad in every fucking way. All right? First of all, let's start at the top and say, $1,000 toys, you guys are pricing yourself out of business. This is too expensive for a kid to have, you know. I remember back in the 80s, I wanted a Lego set that was $99, and that just seemed astronomically too much. But that would only be about a $500 set these days, $600 maybe. $1,000 sets, clearly Lego doesn't think that this is targeted at kids, but it is, because guess what? Star Wars is targeted at kids. And there's no way that most kids are going to be able to afford $1,000 anything.
I think it's targeted at grown-ups.
Clearly it is, except it's still going to be seen in toy catalogs and on toy websites and in toy stores everywhere. And kids are going to say, Mom, I want this for Christmas. And mom is going to have this uncomfortable conversation with their child about why they can't ever have this for Christmas, you know? And now mom has to have conversations with the kid about economics, about, you know, why you can't even afford $1,000 anything for yourself, let alone for your kid. You know, I mean, it's just a really depressing conversation all the way over. And then there's always going to be that one asshole set of parents who does buy it for their kid in school. And then the kid in school, your kid, is going to say, but they got one. Why can't I have one? And again, with the uncomfortable conversation, it's bad. It is bad for business. It's bad for fandom. It's bad for kids. It's bad for parents. This is bad. This is $1,000 Star Wars Lego sets are bad. And I'm just not going to get off this hill, man. And same with $1,000 Transformers. Same thing. $1,000 toys are bad. They are bad for business, bad for kids, bad for adults, bad for the fandom. You know, I mean, what kind of Star Wars fan? I mean, Star Wars fans want to be able to buy Star Wars merchandise. Transformers fans want to be able to buy a Transformer. They don't want $1,000 Transformers that are just priced beyond anything they'll ever be able to afford, you know? And even if I could afford it, what person in their rational mind would ever justify the price of a $1,000 Death Star slice? It's not even a full Death Star. It's literally a vertical slice of it. And okay.
If it wasn't like $1,000, oh, sorry. I was just wondering if you would want one if you didn't have to pay that much. Do you like the way that slice of Death Star looks?
It's a cool $500 set. It doesn't appeal to me, but it's a cool set that you could hang on your wall. And, you know, unlike a lot of sets that take up a lot of horizontal real estate, this is kind of a cool art piece, you know. So in that way, I think it's a cool set. I think it's way overpriced. I think $300 of that $1,000 is going toward the Star Wars license. That's what I think. And having to pay the people over at Lucasfilm, the team over at Lucasfilm, to approve this set from the Lego group, or to hire people from Lucasfilm to collaborate with the Lego group to create this. You know, I mean, it's just... Yeah, it's bad. Mom, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, are you aware that they have a Lego Masters Junior?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good.
We saw the first episode.
I meant to tell you a couple of months ago and forgot.
Or maybe we saw the first two episodes. We watched one or two.
Yeah, yeah, we saw two.
Okay, yeah, we saw the first couple episodes. We haven't seen anything beyond that, but yeah. And actually, let me just say, I think I like it more. Because I remember being one of those kids, you know, who's just, because I went into it going, oh, you know, come on, kids on TV, how good can this possibly be, you know, and also, how smart can kids possibly be, you know, compared to these adult Lego builders, you know, and I completely forgot what it was like to be a 10, 12-year-old Lego builder, and your imagination is literally unhinged,
rubber,
you know, and you know, to imagine the shit that I could have built when I was 10 years old with an unlimited amount of Legos like that, excuse me, Lego like that, I would have just, it would have
Lego bricks like that.
No, you don't have to say the bricks part, just drop the S, just drop the S. Lego is already plural, it's fine. You don't have to put the bricks part. It's that's where people, that's where the blowback comes from. You know, just drop the S. It's fine. You won't get the nasty stares if you just drop the S. but yeah, that S sound at the end really just pisses people off. so yeah, So I think I'm enjoying it a little more. You know. It sucks to see little kids cry because they lose, or because something they were working on crumbles, you know. And believe
me, that's kind of sad.
Yeah, that's why each team is assigned a grown up.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Clearly, and probably why Will Arnett is not the host, and they also replaced Jamie with the other guy. The host, the judge Jamie with the other guy, and he is clearly very good with children, and I think that was a really smart choice, because Jamie can be very dry, you know.
It's also not unusual for one of these programs when they come up with a junior edition to have different staff running it.
Yes.
It's not the same. But it's Project Runway Junior.
Yeah.
Top Chef Junior, Master Chef Junior.
Yeah.
They not all the judges are switched out, but often the main people on the show are, about half of them are switched out at least.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we can switch over to, we can segue into Star Trek, because yes, we are not a Star Trek podcast, and say that today the Lego group teased their very first Star Trek Lego set. And you can see it's a stupid little 10-second teaser where somebody is beaming into the transporter room and, surprise, it's a little minifig of Jean-Luc Picard. So this is, of course, our first official Star Trek Lego set. And, of course, it's probably going to be $900.
Wait, is it a transporter room?
No, I think it's just gonna be The Enterprise. I think it's going to be the Enterprise D. I mean, that's what the rumors are saying, is that it's the Enterprise D. So we will see. Yeah. In a case we can guess it's going to include a little minifig of Jean-Luc Picard. okay, and so let's see. The other big announcement today that was dropped, because it's Star Trek Day, was surprise. A YouTube Star Trek show was surprise dropped by Nickelodeon. It is called Star Trek : Scouts, and is a brand new original animated YouTube first series that marks the, quote, first preschool extension of the Star Trek franchise, unquote. Here is the official logline. Star Trek Scouts follows 3 8-year-old friends, J.R., Sprocket, and Rue, as they train to become future Starfleet explorers by going on epic out-of-this-world missions that push them to, quote, discover, grow, and boldly go, unquote. Star Trek Scouts, this is from TrekMovie.com, by the way. Star Trek Scouts will be released as 20 3 to 4 minute long video episodes on Nickelodeon's Blaze and the Monster Machines YouTube channel. Blaze and the Monster Machines.
Okay, so the picture are little Star Trek animals.
Yep.
Okay, there's little Star Trek people.
There's little Star Trek people. The show was developed and produced by Nickelodeon Digital Studio in association with CBS Studios.
They totally tried to give that little boy a pike hairdo.
Yep, they totally did. The first episode, Asteroid Blasters number 1 of the short form series, is available now. And here is the synopsis. Hang on, folks. Oh, no. A giant soap bar asteroid is zooming through space toward the Star Trek Scouts. J.R., Rue, and Sprocket have just 4 minutes before it makes impact. They'll need to think fast, work together, and use their science and engineering brains to stop the soap bar asteroid. Can you help them pick the right item to launch and save the day from a soapy disaster in outer space? Join them in a fun bubble bath party with their pet sidekicks, too.
That's so bad.
Meet the Star Trek Scouts. J.R., Rue, and Sprocket are 3 best friends training to become future Starfleet explorers. Join their adventures as they blast asteroids, rescue cosmic critters, and work together to save the day in outer space with their intergalactic pet sidekicks, Zips, Bubbles, and Star.
Wow.
Check it out, YouTube. In case you missed that, it's on Nickelodeon's Blaze and the Monster Machines YouTube channel.
Okay, so I'm totally making fun of it. However, if it came out and there was a little Star Trek cartoon that my 2 or 3-year-old might enjoy watching, I would totally put it on.
Yes, because even Star Trek Prodigy was probably too adult for 3-year-olds.
No, they're definitely going for the youngest demographic possible. This is 2, and I'm looking at the pictures. I'm thinking 2 to 4. That's about it, and you've lost them.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It is very young.
2 to 4. Perfect thing to pull up on your phone when you're standing in line at the bank. Here, watch this. We're only going to be 4 minutes. Watch this.
I guarantee if they watch that, when they get older, they're going to be able to get into other Star Trek versus other kids that would have disconnect there, getting into a rather adult show or being interested. It will be on and watching it, and then, you know, they'll...
It's true. It's true. I mean, I was watching actual Star Trek when I was 4,
but that was all that was on, you know? Yeah. We were watching what was provided on Star Channel Trek, 2 or whatever.
But it
whatever.
Got me into Star Trek just fine. So, I mean, this is cool. I mean, I'm not making fun of it because, you know, we've been saying for years now, it's okay for them to make Star Trek that's not for everyone. And clearly they're just, this is Star Trek that's not for everyone, you know.
Plus it's some rogue people doing it, right?
No, I mean, it's Nickelodeon and CBS Studios.
Okay, right. Yeah.
So this is like, I mean, they collaborated on Prodigy before, so this is just their new thing. So, let's see here. The last thing that dropped today, last bit of Star Trek news, and we're running along here, but that's okay. The last bit of Star Trek news is the the audio drama Star Trek Con dropped today, dropped its first episode today, and you can pick that up wherever you listen to your fine podcasts. You listen to it right after this. Yeah, you can go check it out. Zoe and I listened to it today on our way driving back up from Oakland. And Zoe, what did you think? Star Trek Con is written by Nicholas Meyer, who wrote Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. And it is a sequel to Space Seed and a prequel to Star Trek II. It covers what happened to Khan in between being dropped off on SETI Alpha 5 and being discovered again by the people in Reliant. We only listened to the first episode. It's the only one that's been released, but George Takei has a role in it. Tim Russ plays Ensign Tuvok. And, it's kind of a found footage type podcast where they're going over recovered logs from Khan's time on SETI Alpha 5. And this, they mentioned in this, takes place 2 years after Kirk's death, which I guess is in Star Trek Generations. Anyway, Zoe, what did you think?
I liked it.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, it kept my interest. We finished an episode in a drive. That was kind of nice. It entertained. I would totally listen to another one.
Okay. Yeah, I liked it too. It's an audio drama, so it's not like an audiobook. It's got multiple voice actors and sound effects and all that kind of stuff. So I liked it too. It's about 45 minutes.
Everybody that talked was very clear. Like when it comes to audiobooks, and then they're having multiple characters and voices, like you're saying, mm-hmm. sometimes it gets hard to. If you don't like someone's voice, you know, there's that one character or they have a really heavy accent and you can't really understand what they're saying, it ruins the audiobook for me. But I really liked everybody's voices, the people we knew and the people we didn't know. It all sounded really good.
Yeah. So I forget exactly how many episodes are. 8, I think, episodes. And so check that out wherever you can find, or wherever you listen to your fine podcast. Wherever you listen to this podcast is probably the answer. Check it out. We both recommend it. And now, on to the episodes we are supposed to be discussing. Strange New Worlds, episode 8, season 3, episode 8, 4.5 Vulcans. And then episode 9, which is called Terrarium. We'll go ahead and start with 3.5 Vulcans.
4.5 Vulcans.
I think my headphones are dying. Hold on.
No, you cut out on mine too. You disappeared.
Yeah. What is going? Can you guys hear us still?
Yep. Maybe you're fine.
Hold on. Let me see if I can. Maybe I lost the frequency. No, I can't hear myself at all.
But there, you're back.
But what?
I got you on mine.
Okay.
And we can hear you just fine.
Okay, there we go. All right.
I had to turn it up really high, though.
That's interesting. Yeah, something might be going on with my board because...
you know when you say, I blew it out, that was me?
Yeah.
Because you go away, that was what I thought happened.
Okay, yeah. Anyway, 4.5 Vulcans. Mom, what did you think of this episode? Our resident Vulcan expert.
I enjoyed it very much.
Okay.
It's Strange New Worlds. It has never happened that I didn't enjoy it very much. I mean, I always enjoy it very much.
Okay. All right. Okay. Zoe, what did you think?
Well, I mean, I agree. It's Strange New Worlds. They're all amazing to see every episode, even if we have things to say about the episodes themselves. There were a couple things in this episode that drove me a little crazy, but I think overall I really liked it, and I liked it more the second time.
okay. I thought it was well done. I have a question, though. Is Strange New Worlds just a live-action cartoon? I mean, because these episodes are very cartoony, you know. And I mean, even the 60s Star Trek wasn't this campy. I mean, they really need to dial the whimsy back 10%, please.
Yeah, they could dial the whimsy back 10%, but frankly, I'm enjoying the heck out of it, so I don't care.
I will say, I of course enjoyed this episode, but this episode is very much a freaking cartoon, you know? And, I mean, right up, I mean, it's just like, okay, they established... You think that this is what we're going to be doing. We're going to be going on this mission. Everybody's got to turn into a Vulcan. We're going to go on this mission. And boom, oh, we're back. And then the opening sequence starts. And you're like, okay, apparently that was not going to be the episode. And you're just supposed to take so many things on faith like you would in a cartoon. You know, bink, they're Vulcans. And then bink, they're not Vulcans, you know. And yeah. I mean, there was some definitely, there's some funny stuff.
I just, you know, I'm, the scene where they get the shot and turn in to Vulcans,
mm-hmm.
and they just, you know, they fall to the floor, they're crying in pain, their bones are breaking, they're werewolves now, you know, their body's cracking and groaning, and then they stand up, and they've got brand new hairdos and makeup. And I'm like, wait, when did they do the makeup? I mean, that part really bugged me. But I was just...
Don't you know your hairstyle is based on your DNA?
I mean, Uhura had braids all of a sudden. I'm like, when did the braids... That's a 12-hour job for the hairdresser. I don't know what happened. But anyways, I kind of wished, you know, they had shown them, like, you know, in pain and cracking open on the floor. You know, when they stood up, they should have been sweaty messes, and then they reappear walking down the hall looking all fly. You know, they're gonna go beat someone up in their cool outfits, you know. But there was like, they just stood up and they were made. I would have
enjoyed a scene where Pike Vulcan Pike goes to the mirror and looks at his hair and goes, oh my god, and then tries to figure out what he's supposed to do with his hair, and all he can figure out is just making it go straight up, you know. And, you know, I mean, I would have enjoyed a scene when they actually did their hair, because when they just they all stand up into the camera frame and they all have new hair, you know, and makeup, like, yeah, like Zoe said.
No, that was, I just
it's television, you guys.
Yeah, I know. Well, like I said, know, we're, I mean, so critical. I still really enjoyed it.
Well, no, that's the cartoony part that I'm talking about. You're just supposed to, like, accept it, you know. Just accept it, move on, okay?
Well, maybe their transporter makes wigs now.
Well, no, it wasn't a transporter. It was the medicine they got shot in their neck.
Well, I know, but maybe off-screen, the transporter provided them all with new wigs.
I see. Okay.
It was like it was like a scan. It went right across them. And then, yeah.
I think it was very much supposed to be very sitcom-y. I mean, it has...
Yeah, it did seem very sitcom-y.
It even has the Captain Battelle invites her boss to dinner, you know, without telling her partner, you know. And I mean, that's been done in basically every sitcom that's ever been, you know. And there were a bunch of different little sitcom-y things, you know, that...
Well, they must be terribly tempted, because Anson Mount is a hilarious man. No matter what they... And it must be a dream job for him that he gets to do so many different things. It's definitely not boring when every episode you're like your character transforms into something odd and hilarious.
I didn't really buy Pike as a Vulcan very well, you know. His form of playing a Vulcan was just yelling, you know, and yelling in a monotone, you know, which worked It worked, you know, and then even Una even mentions it when he says, you know, this briefing will be short, and she goes, and loud, you know. I mean, you know, even the writers comment on it. So I mean, clearly when Anson read the script and he read the and loud part, he decided to dial it up. He was like, okay, well, I'm just going to be loud, you know? and it works. It works really well, you know. But I just kept seeing him as Anson Mount playing a Vulcan, you know, and not Captain Pike. I didn't see Captain Pike in there at all, but...
I was laughing too hard to care.
Okay, all right.
If the program makes me laugh, everything else is forgiven.
Yeah. We get confirmation that LSD still exists in the 23rd century, which is amazing because I can't even find it in 2025. I mean, so where the fuck has all this LSD been for 200 years? Jesus. Oh, maybe they just, like, you know, they just, like, dug up the recipe out of the replicator. And they were like, what is this? Let's try it. And they just threw it in the replicator and it gave them LSD. I mean, can the replicator do that? That seems pretty cool.
I don't see why not. It's a chemical compound. You tell a replicator what the chemical compound is, and it produces it.
Yeah. Well, it's like, yeah. We did get...
Besides, if you're Pelia, she's an engineer. She can program the replicator to make anything she wants.
Yes. Well, we did get the Orville where they discover... Mom, you didn't watch the Orville, did you?
I watched a couple episodes and that was it.
There's a hilarious episode where they discover these artifacts from the 20th century and they've got just various things across the table and, you know, here's like an iPod and here's, you know, no, it was a cell phone, which was the main plot of the episode, but a whole bunch of different artifacts from the 20th century, and one of the artifacts is a pack of cigarettes, and... The security officer picks it up and sniffs it and gets immediately, like, apparently his genetics is extremely susceptible to nicotine. And so he's immediately, you know, hooked, and he programs the replicator to replicate cigarettes. And so he spends the rest of the episode trying to quit cigarettes, and it's hilarious. They do, yeah, anyway. Go watch the Orville. It's funny. Bert, you've had your hand up.
Now, every time I see Pike, it reminds me of Headset.
Of who?
The head of the Department of Defense.
Oh, okay.
The same kind of salt and pepper hair. Same sort of personality.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I don't know who that is.
But that could be because this thing started a while back. Before Hegseth even showed up. And
really, and besides, Pike is a much better person than anybody in our government.
Yeah. but it's just the visual of it.
Yeah. I don't know who you're talking about, but I agree. Let's see here. I like the fact that the writers had Ortegas acknowledge the fact that Ortegas's are annoying. Thank you, writers. I agree. Ortegas is fucking annoying. Stay tuned. More on that later. let's see. I love Scotty saying, I just kind of figured Lon is crazy and that hasn't changed. Because Lon is crazy. I like Pike's hand vac.
Scary. I thought he said because Lon is scary.
Lon is scary, yes, and that hasn't changed. I like Pike's hand vac. Although undoubtedly that was a regular vacuum cleaner noise that I heard, and whatever he was holding probably wasn't even a vacuum cleaner at all. But yeah, I would love to have a teeny tiny little vacuum cleaner like that that was that powerful. Leek sorbet, yes or no?
No.
No?
I'll pass.
Okay. All right. We're passing on leek sorbet. You wouldn't even try it once?
No.
Not like garlic ice cream?
Not a bit.
Probably wouldn't try that either.
No. I wouldn't try that either.
Okay. All right. How did Beto get switched back? There was never any scene where Uhura does a reverse mind meld on him. And, you know, puts him back the way he was. So I'm kind of left wondering how did, you know, because Uhura does the mind meld on him and makes him more Vulcan-like.
I assumed she did it after Ortegas left because she realized that she was right.
Okay. Yeah, but we still never got a scene of it. We just get to see, you know, Beto back to his old self again. What else we got here? Your soup is unsatisfactory. Great line. And are we drawer people now? Is that what we are, drawer people? And we got to talk. We have to talk about Doug the Vulcan, of course.
Oh, wait! This reminds me. Did you watch the program past the end?
Yes.
The end.
The stinger. Yes, the stinger.
You did?
Yes.
Yeah. See, I didn't. I turned it off. But then I was watching a YouTube commentary on it and realized I needed to go back, turn it back on, and watch more the rest of it. That was hilarious. That end
so
piece
I could
did.
See an. What don't you want to see a whole episode of those two?
I wouldn't mind that a bit.
Me either. It was so entertaining. Yeah. I wish they had that at the end of every single episode.
That is a sitcom I would watch. 100%.
Yeah. Spock, that was hilarious.
Spock and Doug both have an apartment in New York City. And
and they discuss the people they've met that day.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, Spock is half human, but wants to be fully Vulcan, and Doug is fully Vulcan and just wants to be human, and they just kind of piss each other off in an odd couple sort of way. Yeah, I would watch that very much.
And it's amazing to me that was entirely ad-libbed. I mean, that was entirely improv.
Was it entirely improv?
Reviewing.
Okay, because I was
not
wondering.
At all.
I was wondering if that was Patton's comedy, that he was just like, if they were just like, let the cameras roll. And
that's what they did. They just let the cameras roll, and you can tell that it's been edited, that they've got things cut out. They just saved all the best parts and showed us that, but still, that was, those guys are very talented. I mean, that was very amusing to watch that.
Yeah.
I love Doug's character in general. They brought in this
short,
ridiculous
Doug.
Vulcan that was just... You know, I
whose
just thought...
Whose parents were really into humans?
Well, you know, they stuck the Star Trek...
it's kind of like your parents were hippies, you know? And so you got the name Star.
When he first gets revealed, they have this, like, handsome guy standing right in front of him while you hear him say, you know, hello to Una or something about her. And then he moves aside, and there is Doug. I thought it was adorable.
Yeah. Absolutely great. And his sister is named Susan, and his cousin is named Pete.
Yeah, that's great.
His cousin Pete is a veterinarian. okay, so yeah, extremely silly episode, but entertaining nonetheless, you know.
Very entertaining. They can be very, very silly, and they're just terribly entertaining. I mean, there's... The one where they were all singing, that was hilarious in places.
So maybe this is our problem with Strange New Worlds, is that they're very good at being silly. And then when they try to go serious, like the next episode, I am not impressed. You know, not as impressed as I am with the silliness. The silliness impresses me, even though, my God, it's silly. You know?
Well, it's very, very creative. Whereas when they're serious, they have a tendency to repeat a plot we've seen before.
Yes. Nice segue into episode 9, quote, Terrarium, unquote.
I save it for next week because we only have 4 more minutes.
That's okay because I only have 4 lines of notes.
All right. That's fine then.
What did you think about this one?
I liked it very much. And I was... very pleased when the Metron guy showed up, and I recognized him immediately. I mean, he's not the same actor, but the graphics are the same. So I recognized him immediately, and he said, I'm a Metron. And I thought, oh, my God. This is a so it was kind of a repeat. It wasn't exactly a repeat of the original series one like that, between the Gorn and Kirk. But I still enjoyed that very much. Okay. I felt terrible when the Gorn got killed.
Yeah, yes. I didn't like watching that.
That's very Star Trek for them to have this terrible enemy, and Ortegas is somebody that's got a really big problem with Gorns, and so she meets this one, but they make friends. But then here comes La'an, and when they ask La'an to go down and check on things, I thought, oh, don't send her. She's got even worse history with Gorns. And, of course, she kills the Gorn, which is really sad.
Well, my objection was that they killed the Gorn because the writers wrote themselves into a corner and didn't know what else to do. Oh, well, just
that was another thought. It was very sad, but on the other hand, there wasn't any other way of resolving it.
That's because they wrote themselves into a corner. You know, they specifically wrote earlier in the episode that the Gorn couldn't go back to her species. And it's like, well, the Gorn should be able to go back to her species. You know, they didn't have to write that in there. But since they did write it in there, now they don't know what to do with the Gorn except kill it. You know, there's no choice but to kill it.
Well, so. But also that's consistent with the characters. Because Ortegas and La'an, either one of them might have killed the Gorn pretty much on sight, but Ortegas wasn't armed, so that took care of that. But La'an was armed.
Yeah, I guess. Let's see, what did you think?
I liked the episode, because yeah. I like anything with Gorn, and there were some things that I did really like about it. Maybe a whole episode of Ortegas isn't totally what I'd be looking forward to, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Okay. I did not.
I thought the Gorn also looked an awful lot like Targs. Because I just watched the movie that had a Targ in it, and when I saw this Gorn, I thought, that looks just like the Targ. I wondered if it was the same puppet.
Huh.
I liked it that it was female.
I liked it was female, too.
If they had really done anything with that. Sure, but they didn't.
They
you know.
Did, because there was almost a sisterhood happening there, even though yeah, one of them yeah. was a lizard.
All right, did I have to be a girl to get this episode? I mean,
absolutely.
Maybe, yeah.
Okay, all right. Okay. I found the entire episode to be incredibly contrived. And not only contrived by the writers, but then we find out at the end that the entire episode is contrived by the Metrons. And that was just like compounded the contrivedness that I felt with this episode. I was like, they could have made this episode a standalone episode. I would have respected it more had they not brought the Metrons in at the end.
I like the Metrons coming in at the end.
And they tried to connect it with a previous thing. I just didn't like it
very much.
Yeah.
I liked it with Scotty and Kirk, too. They had a, you know, you saw that camaraderie happening between them. And I kind of liked that, too. And I really like Scotty.
Scotty is great. Scotty, I think, is the highlight of this season in the exact opposite way that Pelia is not the highlight of this season. Pelia is just driving me even more crazy every episode. And I'm glad they introduced Scotty so we can get rid of her eventually. Here are my notes here. We get a name drop of Division 12 that apparently investigates ghost stories at sea. And that smells like a new series coming. Star Trek does the X-Files. I mean, Division 12, they literally name dropped it. They put it right there. You know they're going to do something with it.
It'll just be the division symbol and the number 12. That'll be how the show represents.
Ortega says that Spock is too many ounces, and Uhura chuckles at that. And then Spock says, my weight is a precise such and such. Is that not obvious? And I'm like, is weight shaming still a thing in the 23rd century? You know, that, Spock weighs too many ounces. You know, I mean, really, fat shaming? Is that where we're going, Uhura? Okay, I blame Uhura. The personal log breaks as Ortegas is talking to it. And Ortegas decides, that's okay, I'll just talk to myself instead. And maybe my main issue with this episode is I was not one of those Mortegas people. I found Ortegas to be an annoying character, poorly written, and this episode didn't make it any better. And an episode where she just basically talks to herself the entire episode drove me fucking batty. Because she's just not a well-written character, and there was no actual character development in this either. You know, yeah, maybe they mean in an episode where she got over her trauma over the Gorn, there was no other actual development of the Ortegas character, you know, and nothing really deep.
What I really liked about this episode was that when she realized the Gorn was nice and trying to help her, we didn't have to go through a bunch of memories of all of her trauma.
That's
she
true.
Just easily rolled into, wait, that's well, a nice that's, Gorn. I'm just going to, like, well, you know, hang was, out with this Gorn.
Maybe that was my problem, is she got over her trauma too quickly. You know, and I know it was a survival situation. She had minutes to decide whether I'm going to shelter with this Gorn or
I
not.
I felt like that was character. She could choose to be angry and disturbed for the rest of her life, or she could realize quickly, you know, oh, this Gorn's nice. I'm going to just roll with that.
Yeah.
Not to mention that she had to roll with it because the Gorn had the food.
Yeah. I mean, I guess my main objection to this episode is if you count the original arena, we've already seen this episode 3 times before. We did not need to see Star Trek do this episode again. You know, if you like stuff like this, go watch Enemy Mine. Go watch the movie Enemy Mine, because they did it best. And Star Trek is, you know, still doing that same thing, you know. So that's my biggest objection to this episode. Cool name drop of Captain Decker of the Constellation, though. We know who Captain Decker of the Constellation is. And that's about all I got. Oh, except for annoying 21st century speak. When Ortegas says we'll count that as another W for the team, another W for the team is something that was coined about 7 years ago. You know, a W being a win and an L being a loss. So yeah, count that as a W. You know, I hate it when 21st century slang works its way in as if it has survived the next 200 years. Anyway. That's all I got to say about that episode. You're laughing just because...
Grammar police.
Grammar police. It's not grammar police.
Yeah, I know.
It's just, you know... Yeah.
Anachronisms.
Yeah, exactly. It's an anachronistic phrase. That's all. It's like having her say groovy. You know, we'd all just shake our heads, and so I just shake my head when somebody says, you know, we'll count that as a W for the team. I'm like, okay, all right, shake your head now. All right, we'll call that done, and we're going to do this, and Mom and Bert, thanks for joining us this week, and we will talk to you later, next week.
Bye. You have arrived at your destination.
Okay, and that'll do it for... that'll do it for us for this week. Please check out all the wonderful offerings the Great American Broadcast Network has to offer. That would be this show, The Ramble, The Intersection, The Arena, and many others. Check them out. Gabnet.net is where you find them. I'm Damien Chaplin.
And I'm Zoe.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Have a great week. And remember, when it comes to great conversation, the X marks the spot. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for calling.
Blah, blah, blah. That's a wrap!